Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Hey, you know what we're going to talk about today? We're going to continue that discussion we had yesterday. Yesterday, we were talking about sleep and the nature of sleep. And boy, that opens up so many doors to the epiphenomenalistic brain. Epiphenomenalism. Not a good word, epiphenomenalism. It means that, you know, you kind of believe that your mental states are caused by some underlying physical state. So, for example, you know, you have a, what makes your heart beat fast is not fear, but the state of your nervous system that makes your heart beat fast. And then when your heart beats fast, you say, "Ooh, I'm afraid." Epiphenomenalism. What's important about epiphenomenalism? It's a big word. No. Besides that, epiphenomenalism is because we can understand ourselves a little better nowadays. How sleep works, where sleep comes from, what is sleep all about? Do we all dream? Now, there's a whole bunch of people out there who are studying sleep, and of course they study sleep because most of them want to sell a sleep product. If they sell pillows, they study sleep. If they sell mattresses, they study sleep. If they sell medication, they study sleep. So they study it, and they try to tell you about it, and they try to tell you what's important, how to sleep, how not to sleep. A huge industry. Does everybody sleep? Do some people not sleep at all? Well, there's a really important question, because it turns out that there is somebody in Finland who didn't sleep for 28 days and made it like, you know, a thing. We'll talk about that. Why do we sleep? Do we need to? And does the physical, we were talking about the physical changes that take place in our body when we sleep, are they essential? Well, we know something about serotonin. And we know that you got to replenish serotonin, and we know you need sleep for that. And we know if you don't get serotonin and therefore you don't sleep, you get out of whack a little bit, you know, with your serotonin. That will affect a lot of things, your menstrual cycle, stuff like that, you know, moods, appetites. Prolactin, we learned about that too. There's much more about this that we covered yesterday. We're not going to go back and do it all again today, because today I want to talk about nightmares. I want to talk about dreams. Dreams was a field of study for me for many years. I believe that we could understand people if you understood our dreams. Don't you think if you analyzed your dreams, you'd understand yourself? I'm not so sure. Let's take a look at dreaming. Dreaming has been thought of as you have a lot of unresolved stuff that's running around in your brain. And when you go to sleep at night, that stuff gets pulled up and you dream about it. And if that stuff is bad, then you have a nightmare. So if you have unresolved issues with your mother, and then you have a dream about somebody coming after you to kill you, it's probably because you have unresolved issues towards your mother. That's a psychoanalytic point of view about nightmares. They figure nightmares are an extension of dreams, are an extension of unconscious thought, are an extension of stuff that you just haven't resolved in the course of a day. That's one theory. May or may not be true. Then why would we have nightmares? First of all, let's look at the idea, does everybody dream? Now, here's what they determined. They studied, because we have neuroscience now, we can study your brain, and we can map image it. We can take images of your brain and your brain activity, your cortical activity, and we can see when you're dreaming and when you're not. There are two types of sleep. One is REM sleep, and one is NREM sleep. And the non-REM sleep and the sleep are very important. The REM sleep is the one where you blink your eyes while you're sleeping. According to science, that's when you dream. A dream lasts from 5 to 20 minutes, maybe a half hour, no more. Remember you thought it lasted all night? Do you think you have one dream that goes on forever? Well, a dream, when you're sleeping and you go in this REM sleep, you start to dream. Now, is that dream turns into a shock? If you wake up in the middle of the REM sleep, that means if you're in that REM period and you wake up in the middle of it, you know exactly what you were dreaming. If you dream and go through the REM stage to the NREM stage, somehow the dream is not remembered. Or might not be remembered. It sometimes is remembered, but therefore, why some people remember dreams and some don't? It's because of the REM dream, because you may wake in the middle of the REM sleep. What would make you wake? You're having a dream. You're being chased, right? It's just a dream. No, you're not being chased. You're looking for somebody, that kind of dream. You know that dream, looking for somebody dream? Searching for somebody dream? Well, that kind of dream makes you not wake up and look around your house for where the person is. You go through the dream. Other dreams where they're a threat make you wake up. So here's the question. If you dream about somebody and then you wake up, do you want to call them up? No. Somehow we separate the dream from the non-dream. Yet we could be affected by bad dreams. We could be so affected. We could have a bad dream and it could just haunt us all night. I had a dream that you left me and went off with, you know, my cousin Sadie and took the children with you and sold them. Something like that. And then you check in with your mate and say, are you sure you're not fooling around with Sadie? You know, you're trying to check it out because you had a dream and maybe the dream validates your perception. Now, that's a belief, you know, and everybody kind of goes along with the thought, this maybe, you know, maybe that's what it's about. Well, let's try something else. You know, we know this. We know that dogs dream. We know the cats dream. They sleep, and if you look at them and you'll see this REM stage, they actually dream. Now, do you think a dog ever dreams of what he dreams? What are you dreaming of? You think he dreams about other dogs? You think he dreams about that cute poodle walking down the street the other day? You think he dreams about maybe getting a big dish of food? What's he dreaming about? And when he wakes up, does he look startled from his dream? No. You wake a dog up any time he wakes up, the dream's over. He's there. Want to play? Right? You wake your cat up, they're not. Hey, wait a minute, I was just having a bad dream. You know, I could just imagine saying that to Yo-Yo or Paris, you know, my two cats. Get up, you got to move. Oh, wait, I was just sleeping. Let me sleep 5 more minutes. They don't do that. They just get up. It's over. It's separated for them, but not for humans. So how would it serve a mammal's purpose to have the dream integrated into your being in an almost epiphenomenalistic kind of way? It's as if this dream is creating a reality, a thought. That's my question, and this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm going to give you a lot of hints about sleep today and about dreams. I want to talk about darkness. I want to talk about a phenomenal theory about dreaming. Listen to this. Leave it to the Italians. Revansuo, R-E-V-O-N-S-U-O, a doctor of Dr. Revansuo in 2000, put through a novel evolutionary hypothesis according to which the biological functioning of dreaming, he says, is a repeat rehearsal of threat perception and threat avoidance responses. Now, get what this means. He says in order for humans to have come up out of the ground and survived you know, the savannah and getting up there. The way that they got through was they had nightmares, and nightmares strengthened their survival. They got all this, they got all this flooding hormones, and they had this panic responses, and in their dreams, they fought battles. And that strengthened them and their ability to create responses to battles. So he says nightmares are like acting. Nightmares are like exercising. Nightmares are like getting your brain ready for battle. Nightmares strengthen you. Intense dreams strengthen you. He reviewed, his idea became that the stimulation hypothesis is like, it's supported by a whole bunch of empirical evidence on dreaming, you know, about the content, about children's dreams. And it becomes a fascinating thing. You wonder to yourself, why would we do such a thing? Why do we keep doing this to ourselves? Anyway, he interprets his evidence as showing that the original adaptive function of dreaming is to rehearse such threat perception and threat avoidance skills that were crucially important for the reproduction success of ancestral humans. In order for a human to succeed and to have babies, he had to get strong, and the way he got strong was he developed survival skills, and since he didn't want to go out there and test himself against a lion every day, he dreamed about it. And he dreamed the avoidance of it. And he dreamed how to run away. And he dreamed how to pick up a spear and fight back. And that helped him become a stronger human, so that when he did run into a lion, he had rehearsed. Interesting theory, don't you think? Revan suo. Leave it up to the Italians. So in the ancestral environment, the constant nocturnal rehearsing of threat perception and threat avoidance skills increased the possibility of successful threat avoidance in real situations and led, therefore, to more reproductive success. Therefore, threat stimulation, which is nightmares, is the biological adaptive form of dreaming. Interesting, don't you think? Phenomenal. Phenomenal. I think that's interesting. Why I think that's really interesting is because, you know, we spend so much time trying to be smart and understand. I mean, it may, of course, may not be true, but I've done a lot of research on this and like to present some of what we found, too. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. You want to hear dreaming? Listen to this. Now, I'm going to show you something I put together because, you know, yesterday I was doing something with you about music. Here, this is my little fun feel. Artie Shaw, old clarinetist from way back. There's a thing called nightmares, and this is his nightmare music. Seems to have this little element of real danger in it, right? We add into it, we'll add a little of my stuff as well here, throw some of this in. You think I could create a nightmare right here? Here we go, here, listen. Imagine if you were sleeping and dreaming in this kind of state of mind. Spooky, isn't it? Isn't that beautiful? Somebody knew something. Here's some interesting stuff. I'm going to teach you today how to get more out of your sleep, get more out of your Artie Shaw, get more to your understanding, but first, I want to talk about one of our great friends, darkness. Darkness is so misunderstood. Darkness used to be like the end of a day, you know what I mean? And so darkness became the end of the day until we got televisions and computers, and then darkness was no longer the end of the day. We got electric lights. You ever looked at the world from out there, you know? And you look down, you'd see electric lights everywhere. It's an illuminated world at night. So, darkness becomes no longer the preparation of the body for the biochemical transformation from the sympathetic nervous system to the parasympathetic nervous system, or in effect the repair process of your body, which darkness used to be. You get up during the day, you go out there, you do your planting, you do your hunting, you do your gathering, you do your mating, right? You go home, you go to sleep, that's the end of that. You repair your body, you feel good, you wake up, back to hunting and gathering and all the other stuff. But we had there at our assistance this friend called night, called darkness, Nyx, N-Y-X, the mighty Greek goddess of night, lived underground and ascended to the sky at day's close to bring dusk and darkness. Her son was Hypnos. Aha, sounds familiar. As in hypnotize, as in hypnogog. The sweet-natured god of sleep would accompany her every night, sprinkling poppies over the earth below. Remember from a story about the more recent folk band of the Sandman. You know, the Sandman sprinkling, Mr. Sandman, lend me a dream. So that whole thing comes from this Greek myth. But we don't go gently into the night. We knock ourselves out with alcohol, sleeping pills, sheer exhaustion. Our widespread fear and disregard of darkness may be the most critical overlooked factor in this epidemic of sleep disorders. It's the way we relate to darkness. We suffer today from serious complications of a kind of a psychological night blindedness, a far-reaching failure to understand the significance of night and darkness. We don't get it. It is so important. The idea that there are certain hormones that will not work if light is present. Will not work. I mean, just they won't reproduce if light is present. It's kind of phenomenal. I remember Gary Noel used to talk about that all the time on his program. He'd talk about how you got to seal up every bit of light in your house, you know, to get it all. Anyway. But, of course, who wants you to have this? The television industry doesn't want you to close out the lights. The computer doesn't want you to close out the lights. The electric company doesn't want you to close out the lights. Keep the lights going. All right, so darkness. Psychotherapists never pay attention to people's sleep patterns. They don't really look at it. They don't ask, how do you sleep? Where do you sleep? How do you give yourself sleep? It would seem like it's the process that should be our job, that this is your mind, you know? Are we protecting your mind? Well, in our culture, dominant daylight is dominant. It's overvalued. It's even deified. Darkness is dismissed. It's devalued. It's demonized. Even to have dark skin is bad. The darker your skin, the worse it is. From divine light to light beer, things associated with the metaphor of light suggest God, goodness. We want to shed light, see the light, lighten up. Our association with metaphoric darkness, in contrast, is confusion, immortality, immorality, I'm sorry, despair, evil, all in the dark. We want nothing more than to avoid dark times, dark nights of the soul, and of course the dreaded Prince of Darkness. It would seem that death is associated with darkness. At the same time, night and dark free us from the constraints of the waking world. It's as if night is a psychological duty-free zone. While the social explanations of day tell us how we should be, night reveals who we really are. At night, you get naked. You know what I mean? At night, you take your clothes off. You loosen your social constraints. You allow your shadows to emerge. Darkness inhibits us because it disinhibits us. You see, we take off our inhibitions, so we get inhibited by darkness. So darkness unreveals yourself to yourself. It reveals yourself. so people avoid darkness. In times past, human activity naturally downshifted as dusk signaled the approach of night. You know, if as soon as it got dusky out, the world downshifted. So you'd be working all day, and then here comes dusk. Okay, time to downshift. The world got quiet. Crickets would chirp, you know. The trilling of night birds began, and everything slowed down. Modern times, as dusk approaches, what happens? Rush hour. Of all things, rush hour. A massive, noisy, grinding, smoky movement of people and machines, automobiles, buses, trains, airplanes, schools, daily activity back to home, TVs, computers, nighttime activity. Go dancing, go to a restaurant, go out. Nighttime. As natural daylight recedes, artificial lights automatically come on. Commercial signs, street lights, neons, headlights. By the time we get home, wall lights come on. Porch lights, house lights, television sets. You know? If a divine being or angel or extraterrestrial were monitoring us, the most glaring global transformation they'd have witnessed in recent generations is the worldwide illumination of our nights. What happened? If they were watching us for 200 years, they'd say, here it was light, and then it got dark. See, the moon went to the other side, or the sun went to the other side, now it's dark over here. No, the sun goes to the other side, now it's light over here, too. An amazing thing we've done. So darkness is kind of thrown out. And with that gets thrown out a bunch of things. Recent research suggests that merely being quietly awake in a darkened space provides the same beneficial effects on our bodies and minds as being asleep. Just as light stimulates the release of serotonin, which energizes us, darkness encourages the production of melatonin. That's what I was talking about. The key neurohormone in our nocturnal biology. If you don't have that, you don't sleep well. There's mounting evidence that even minimal nighttime light exposure can damage our circadian rhythm and suppress the production of melatonin. We're now talking about, yesterday we were talking about the 90-minute cycle of sleep. If that gets interrupted by light, it interrupts your chemical reactions. So darkness is kind of our prince here. We're really looking to it. And look how cheap it is. Darkness. Turn off the lights, turn off the electric. Right? Save money. But I know that sounds simple. Because to some people, TV is their best friend. The computer is their best friend at night. It's like it's kind of a cycle. I know I should sleep. But I can't sleep. Because I've trained myself not to sleep. Because the TV is on, and it's my friend, and it doesn't bother me. Well, none of the research that we could find indicated that the light at night does not affect your dream state. That dusk and darkness are your sedative, and that there's a night-mindedness that you need to develop. Now, night-mindedness is a psychological state. It's a practice of accessing and expanding one's sense of night consciousness. And it isn't just about utilizing sleep-promoting techniques, but it's a way of kind of keeping in mind what night is. Don't turn up the lights. Keep darkness as your friend. Make darkness your friend. Cultivate night-mindedness. Think of rhythm. Think of non-stimulation. Think of if you're seeing something, don't see something too active. Don't see something too dynamic. Don't activate your brain. Don't activate your hormones because you're going to activate the wrong ones. And how are you going to sleep? Don't eat broccoli. Because isn't broccoli have catecholamines? What is it? I think it does. Let me see broccoli. Absolute darkness. You got to take. There are beans, raw onions. Broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, and spicy foods. They create certain gases that take you off your hormone. So they're not good to have at night. You avoid exercise within 4 hours of bedtime. Do not exercise 4 hours before bedtime. You read or view unexciting material rather than exciting material. I had a friend, he had a rule, you know, his mate would want to sleep with the television on. And he said, okay, you could watch anything, because he didn't want the TV on. But he said, if you're going to watch it and the TV's on, he said, watch something English. If it was British, it was always kind of calm. You know, British theater or something. As opposed to Americanized with guns and bank jobs and stuff. Definitely, if you are sensitive to caffeine, if almost everybody is, avoid all caffeine. Caffeine in Coca-Cola is really sneaky. It's a sneaky kind of caffeine. It creeps up on you in a funny kind of way because of the sugar-caffeine-Coke combination. It's highly caffeinated, and today I came up with articles about caffeine and that kind of caffeine and how that affects your sleep. It says try to consume carbohydrates, fats, but avoid protein before you go to bed, and drink warm milk products if you drink warm milk. Now, these are help to sleep, but getting the whole idea of sleep is darkness consciousness. Dark consciousness. Try to get this idea that you go gently into the night. You know, you want to go gently into the night. You want to go into that place where you can actually feel the thing coming over you. And I know you're not going to want to do it. I know you're going to say to yourself, I can't do it. Well, there's much more information. Here you know. Missing one night's sleep is not fatal. A person will generally be irritable during the next day, and they'll either slow down because they become tired, or they'll become totally wired because of adrenaline. That's what happens the next day. Adrenaline compensates for your lack of sleep. That wears you out because that turns into cortisol, or that actually secretes cortisol. Now, cortisol you can't get rid of, so it wears you down. If a person misses two nights of sleep, it gets worse. Attention span falls by the wayside. Mistakes increase. That's why people who usually have accidents on a mechanical job are people who don't sleep much. After 3 days, a person starts to hallucinate. Not always. A person who gets just a few hours of sleep every night can experience many of the same problems over time. You know, two other things are known to happen during sleep, which we talked about, the growth hormone, which is very important, and prolactin. Sleep gives the body a chance to repair the muscles. Now, this is all, of course, if you sleep. You want to be able to sleep, so we want to be able to talk with you. We want to talk about your nightmares. When we get back, I'm going to show you a theory of nightmares, a theory of dreams, a theory of sleeping. That's going to turn your head around. And then I want to hear your calls about your sleep and your dreams. Do you have repeated dreams? You know, do you have something that happens? And how is nighttime for you? Is nighttime your friend? Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I want to do a special shout-out to an old soul, Bert Cronin, who's passing through this world as we speak, probably. And I want to, I want to thank all of you for being as beautiful as you are. I've been hearing from you. One more reminder, by the way, as of the 20th, you know, on the 20th, there will be one more showing on PBS of the program Home. But at what, 2 p.m.? Is it 2 p.m.? Oh, good. So they say at 2 p.m. At 2 p.m., there'll be one more. You could TiVo it, program it, see it. I will be back with you in just a couple of minutes. This is Armand DeMille, WBAI. Be back shortly. Sweet dreams are made of these. Who am I to disagree? I travel the world. You. Just me fooling around, my friend. Just me fooling around. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Dreams, huh? You know, a while back, in the early 70s, I was faced with my first clinical case of multiple personality disorder. Now, multiple personality disorder is kind of a phenomenal thing because it's kind of amazing. I've yet to do a full presentation on it on the radio, but it kind of suggests that one person could be five people. And it's much bigger than you think, and I'll go on to describe that at one time. But in part of the treatment of the multiple personality disorder, you used to be able to talk to and access each personality. And you do that, or I did that, through hypnosis. So what I would do is I'd find each personality and I would speak with it, find out what it needs and what it wanted and why it was there and what its job was. One of the personalities that I spoke to was the one who had the nightmares. So I said, let me speak to the one who's having all these nightmares. And a totally different personality came up, and it talked to me. It talked to me. I had never expected it here. I thought I was talking to five different people. Here's this other personality. And I said, who are you? And it said, I'm the one who dreams at night. And I said, you mean you're she dreams? He said, no, I dream. And it turns out that what it suggested to me was that we all have an alter personality. That there's two of us, at least. And that the alter you is walking around during the day being carried inside of you. It is observing things. How is that possible? How is that strange? Isn't it bad enough? Do you ever think that you're two people? You act like two people sometimes, right? But it's really your personality. Well, not according to this information. This person said, no, I have a dreaming self. And the dreaming self, for me and for other people, is separate from the real self. Well, this went against every bit of Jungian theory that I ever had, all my Freudian psychology. What do you mean separate? I said, don't you have the same experience? And it said, no. And I said, why? It said, because I can't see. I said, you can't see. It said, no, I'm in darkness. I live in darkness. Let's go back to the Prince of Darkness. I don't see. The difference between me and the person who goes through the world is the person who goes through the world sees everything. I don't see it. I have to make up images in my mind. So I said, well, that's kind of weird. If you're making up images in your mind, how do you know how things look? And she said back to me, she said, I don't. I tap on the images from the inside of the brain of the person who carries the images. It's like I'm playing recordings, like I'm playing videos. And that's how I make up my dreams. Which makes sense because our dreams get so weird, don't they? At times you could have a tree with a head on it. If you have a nightmare, you know, you have all kinds of mixed things. Well, I thought this is just one thing. This is mysterious. I'm talking to one person only, and this person's a dissociated personality. It can't be real. So I asked her if she would open her eyes, because she was talking to me with her eyes closed. I said, well, you open your eyes. And she opened her eyes, and she was blinded by the light, blinded. I mean, I darkened the room, and she said, I can't stand this light. And I said, oh, how do you like what you see? She said, well, it's different than I thought. Okay, now this kind of spooky, this is therapy. This is, you know, this goes beyond in treatment. This is where you start doing the real stuff. So I'm working with this, and I have this hypothesis. I go to some of my friends who are all dream researchers, and I say, what if everybody has a dreaming self? Well, okay. So we hypnotized a bunch of people. And we called up their dreaming self. Or at first I hypnotized one person, and I called up the dreaming self. And he said to me, and he spoke to me, and he told me the same thing the other person told me. And I said, wait a minute, what are you doing in there? I said, all right, talk to me. I said, would you open your eyes? And he opened his eyes, same reaction, blinded. I can't see it. I didn't think things look like this. But as opposed to the first one, where when you work with a multiple, you always undo what you do, In this case, I said, okay, thank you very much. Now you, the person, can wake up. And he woke up and he called me the next day and he said, I couldn't sleep. I said, why can't you sleep? He says, I don't know why I can't sleep. Second day he calls me. He says, I can't sleep. I had him come back in the office. I hypnotized him. I got the sleeping person to close their eyes again. And he was able to sleep. This phenomena was reported in two psychological journals, because we did further study on it, and we discovered that there is a very good case for why each of us may be carrying an alter personality, an alter self inside of ourselves that is not aware of the world of daylight, can't see, but only makes stuff up at night. Spooky, isn't it? So as crazy as it sounds, it doesn't do much for us, except that it gives you a little distance from what happens to you when you have a nightmare. You know, you have a bad dream and you wake up and you say to yourself, well, who was dreaming? Was it me, Armand, or was it little Armand? Or was it the other Armand who was dreaming, and what was the dream like? So I learned another trick. This is my best trick. If there's one trick in life I wish everybody had, here it is. It was a dream I had when I was young, and it was a dream that I was cornered in a spot, and menacing forces were coming in my direction, and I was panicking, and I didn't know which way to go, and I was going to get hurt by these menacing monsters. And I woke up in a shock, and I said, oh my gosh, and I'm an adult, this is not young me, this is like I'm in my 30s, and I said, what a terrible dream. I'm afraid to go back to sleep. I don't want that dream. Do you ever get that feeling? You wake up and you don't want to go back to it because the dream is waiting for you. But I had an idea. I went back with a machine gun. I really did. I went back and I brought back weaponry. And I went back into my dream. And now I had weapons. And they were coming at me. And I took out my weapons. And I said, I'll shoot you all. And they all went away. And I said, oh, what a good trick. So here's all you got to do. If you have a bad dream, think up the cure for the dream and then purposely go back into your dream. Don't avoid it. Get in there. Close your eyes. You have a dream that somebody's leaving you, right? Get in that dream and capture them and bring them back and tie them down. Do something aggressively the other way. Believe me or not, it works. And I promise you, this is true. I always undo my bad dreams. If I have a bad dream, I won't let it sit there. I'll go back and undo it. I'll say, okay, let's fix it. What do I need? I need to have something different. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go back into my dream and change it. You can change your dreams. You can change them. You could consciously go in there and change them. Isn't that fun? We got to take some time for some calls. You know, imagine people talking about their dreams. Do you have any idea how profound people feel or how alone people are with their dreams? Our telephone number is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. I'm with you. We're going to take some of your calls about sleep and dreaming. And before I do, I just want to remind you, melatonin is the very, very switch we're looking to turn on when we sleep. And wherever there is light, you tend to reduce melatonin. And the biological clock is really based on getting as little light into your eyes as possible. And light while you sleep just completely changes your hormonal reaction while you sleep. You cannot rest if there's light flickering. You just can't do it. You sleep, but you don't rest. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Not another call. We'll take the first call.
Hello, Armand.
Hello.
This is Edward.
Hello, Edward.
Hi, Armand. I don't dream very much anymore.
You mean you don't remember your dreams very much?
I guess you could say that.
Yeah.
But I used to do what you did when I was young, like when I would have a bad dream. I used to call up my superheroes from, like, comic books.
Great idea. Yes. Good. Bring them into your dreams with you.
I had only about 5 dreams I really remember in my life. Nightmares, basically. And some good dreams. I mean, you know, when I was young, I had some good ones, too.
Sure. What was the best dream you ever remember? Can you remember a best dream?
Dreams of flying were very good.
It is pretty terrific, dreams of flying, aren't they? You know, there's one of the phenomena we know is that people over 40 don't dream of flying and people under 40 do dream of flying. What is that about? What is it? Dreams of flying are so good.
I used to dream my body was a kite. It was like a kite, so it would get caught in the wind and I would just, like I could jump and then it would, I don't know why older people, why old people over 40, I mean, I don't mean older so much.
Yeah, how old are you now?
I'm approaching 40.
That's it. Say goodbye to your flying dreams. Well, that's right. Then you get swimming dreams. Hey, Edward, thank you very much for calling in.
You're great, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate you, too. Thank you. I remember it's from, it was from, remember the fish dreams? Guy goes to a psychiatrist, and he says to a psychiatrist, I had a dream about fish. It was from Catch 22, from the book Catch 22. He said, I had a dream about it. I was fishing, and the psychiatrist says to him, that's a sex dream. And he goes back the next day, and he says, I had another dream about fishing, and the psychiatrist said, that's a sex dream. Then finally, he goes back to the psychiatrist, he said, finally, I had a dream about sex, and the psychiatrist said, that's a fish dream. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, Armand. This is Eddie from Queens.
Hello, Eddie from Queens.
How are you? I had a question. Have you ever heard of two people having basically the identical same dream?
Sure.
It's not uncommon or strange? Because it's never happened
to me. Wait a minute. It's uncommon and strange. Yeah. But there's a couple of things about dreaming that are very tricky. And there's a thing called a preview and deja vu. And I want to – it's kind of a funny thing. The brain is a funny thing. Did you ever have deja vu?
Yeah.
You know where you think that something you're seeing you thought about before? Well, the brain has a little switch in it that has like a delay switch. You know, and the delay switch stops information from being recorded by sometime by quite a period of time. So, for example, you could see something and not record it in your mind, and then 5 minutes later – you could see it and say, I thought of that before. But it's just a delay switch before it gets recorded to your brain. This is called what people perceive as deja vu. Sometimes they think they see into the future, and they're not really seeing the future. Well, dreams are like that sometimes. When you compare a dream with somebody else, they actually believe they had the dream as you're telling them about it. And sometimes they could even send you notes and say to you, I had this dream, and somehow it triggers in you a belief that you had that dream. Now, give me your example of two people having the same dream.
Well, actually, it was me and my wife. What happened was, like, about a week ago, I woke up. And it was a dream where we were on a home in Queens, and we've been in there about 3 or 4 years. And what happened was, in my dream, there was a young woman that came to the door, and she needed to use the restroom. But she was real forceful, you know, like when I opened the door, she stepped into me. And I let her in the dream. And she went upstairs, because we live in the upstairs apartment. She got in the restroom. And then she wouldn't leave the house. She wouldn't leave the house. And she got upstairs in the attic. And for some reason, I couldn't get into the attic to get her out. And it was disturbing. You know, it was, you know, like one of those vivid dreams that you have where it's like real.
Yeah, real sure.
And when I woke up, I told my wife because, you know, I woke up, it was like in the middle of the night when I woke up, and I said, you know, it was disturbing. I had this weirdest dream. There was a woman, and I let her use the bathroom in the house, and I couldn't get her out. And my wife said, you know, I had the exact same dream that you let a woman into the house who wanted to use the bathroom, and you couldn't get her out, and she wouldn't leave.
She said, now, we don't know if she had the dream or she remembered at the spot that she had the dream, but let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a very big question. How are you getting along with your wife?
We got ups and downs. I mean,
and just one thing I want to ask you is, how do you feel towards, how many years have you been married?
About 4 years now.
Okay, in the 4 years, did you notice the one disappointing thing about 4 years of marriage, which is that you don't feel as turned on to her as you used to be?
Yeah, Yeah, but that's normal.
Wait, let me just finish. I mean, right away, that's normal, right? But you feel less turned on, right?
Yeah.
And and she must be a little concerned that you're not as turned on as you used to be, don't you think?
Well, it came up. I mean,
yeah, it comes up as an issue, right? Now, let me ask you a question. Doesn't she ever worry that, you know, maybe you're going to somehow turn around and be attracted to somebody else?
She has expressed it, but that's not me. That's not something I do.
Yeah, it's not something you do, but she has expressed it.
She's expressed it.
She's worried that some woman's going to get up in your brain, up in your attic, and you're not going to be able to get rid of it.
But what I'm saying is that...
Well, wait a minute. I'm asking you this question. She occasionally worries that you're going to let some woman into your life because she no longer gives you what she used to give you in some way. And she worries about it even though it's not you. Right?
I can't say I'm not in her head. You know what
but
I mean?
You said she's expressed it.
Well, jokingly, you know, like, you know, where you going? Who you going out? Who you going to
see? Right. Who are you letting up in the attic? How are you going to get rid of him? I don't know how to get rid of him out of the attic. So that kind of dream. So now here comes a real question. Who had the dream first? Was it her or you? You know, maybe it was her dream she projected onto you. Because a funny thing happens when you sleep with somebody. I don't understand this thing about sleeping with people, because sleeping with people has much more to it than just being next to another body. There are so many things that transpire between breath and sweat and air and hormones and, you know, who knows what you transmit to the other person, and maybe your thoughts do go across, and maybe you do share a dream. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's what having a baby is, isn't it?
True. Well, I know Jung talks about the collective consciousness.
That's right.
And the gestalt and all that. But
you're very sophisticated with your knowledge of it. See, that's where my theory got really challenged, because my theory, not my theory, but my observation challenged that whole thing of collective unconscious and the gestalt theory of dreams. You know?
It had never happened to me before, and I had asked a couple of people about it, because my father, he's from the islands, and he gets into that, you know, dream and telling me, watch your back, boy, watch your back, something's going to happen. But I'm not a philanderer, man. I mean, if I'm done with you, I've been married before, and when I'm done with you, I'm done with you. I don't really fool around.
So if they get up into your attic, you want to get them out?
Yeah.
You don't even let them in?
Yeah. I guess that could be it. It just was real weird because it had never happened to me before.
I understand. It's nice that you're as gifted, and it's nice that you're as perceptive as you are, as introspective as you are. I really am proud of you for looking at yourself that way. You sound like a man who spends a lot of time examining his own heart and therefore making yourself capable of a much more loving self. I love it. So thank you.
Thanks a lot. You have
nice
a good
to
day.
Talk to you. Yeah.
You too.
Good guy. Especially New York guys. You know, I mentioned it before. You want a taste of New York, don't miss that film. It's going to be on PBS at 2 o'clock. I'm in it, but it's going to be this Thursday, I think, the 20th.
Saturday.
What is it? 2 p.m. on Saturday. It's on all week, too. It's called Home, the Movie. Good thing. A good thing that happened. Involved WBAI as well. 212-209-2900. One more call. We'll take one more call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Ed in Brooklyn.
Hello, Ed in Brooklyn. We got our representatives.
Got a lot
three
of Eds, too.
That's three Eds.
Well, three Eds are better than one, I guess.
Yes.
Any case, are you aware of the source of that tuck, tuck, tuck sound that you've been playing?
Am I aware of it? Why, are you aware of it?
Yeah. It's a Buddhist instrument made of a gourd and with a small stick is struck that way by Buddhist monks.
Well, you know something? So it must really intrigue you that I have an arm, right?
Yeah, it does. And in fact, I was wondering why it was kind of associated with the word spooky and other words of that sort.
Listen to this now. Listen. Here's a variation on it. So as you could see, it's not the instrument, but it was based on the instrument.
Uh-huh.
And it's a piece that was put together 20 years ago for workshops that I was doing.
Uh-huh.
It's totally unavailable. And I just pulled it out recently, and I said, it's always had this kind of dreamy-like effect.
Yeah. Mm.
You know?
The time, talk about dreamy, the time that I found it most, I don't know, made me most aware was not when I heard it during the daytime in Korea, but at nighttime in the countryside when the monks would begin their wakeful hours around 3 a.m. or so. A marvelous sound in the countryside echoing across the hills as these things are being struck.
And what would it do to you?
I don't know exactly. I just was aware of it, and I found it a wonderful, gentle sound in the early morning.
And nighttime was different when you were over there, wasn't it, Ed?
Well, I'm a city boy, so being out in the countryside was quite different. Even here on retreats, the places outside the city have been different, yeah.
We treasure. We avoid the evening, and I think it's something we should treasure more.
Oh, I love going out in the countryside on a clear night and seeing all the stars that can be seen and planets and whatnot.
Thanks for calling in, Ed.
Thank you for the program.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Bye now.
Armand DeVille with you with the positive mind. So much more to say. But what the heck? Hey, listen, if you want to get a copy of today's program, you could go to WBAI.org and you could download it immediately, or you could go to thepositivemind.com. And I look forward to speaking to you again tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friend. This is Armand DeMille. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1.